Welcome. Today is August 2nd, 2011. Tuesday. And wondering if there's anything happening in the stars. Today is a silver day. And Venus entered Cancer, Mars entered Gemini. There's not a lot really going on in the sky right now of any particular interest. The Sun is in Cancer. The Sun is in Cancer from the middle of July to the middle of August, which is different than the Western dates for the Sun. And Sun in Cancer is more of a, it puts one into the heart energy and brings out the sensitivity, compassion, empathy, understanding. It makes one more concerned about others, ideally, and more willing to extend oneself on behalf of others. It also, Sun in Cancer, has a focus on home and family, because Cancer is ruled by which planet? Do you know? No, each sign is ruled by a particular planet. All planets rule, in Vedic astrology, all planets rule two signs, except the Sun and the Moon. The Sun and the Moon rule only one sign each, even though they are the king and the queen of the planetary cabinet. They only have one sign each. Correct. Moon, Sun rules Leo. Correct. So after Cancer comes Leo. Karak is Cancer. Singh is Leo. So, the Sun is a fire planet by nature, obviously. Hard to look at him with the naked eye. He is pure fire, but he's also fire in terms of his elemental influence. So the sign of Cancer is a what element?
Water.
And it's ruled by the Moon, and the Moon is what element? Water. Correct. So when you have a fire planet Sun in a water element Cancer, what do you get? You get fire in water. So it's not the ideal place for the Sun to be, because it's fire and water. Fire and water don't mix. So it's not a strong position for exercising the individuality, the will, determination, resolve, for exercising strength out in the world, because Cancer is the sign of the Moon. It is also home, hearth and home and family.
But could it also mean that it would be a time from mid-July to mid-August of it being a very emotional time?
Correct. Exactly. But if one is to go out into the world and conquer the world or make your mark in the world from a professional standpoint, the sun is the planet of profession, career success, and making your mark in the world. You have to be strong and confident and determined, and you have to shine in the world if you want to get anywhere. So at home, is that important? No. So the sun cools his rays when he comes home, because we don't need to do that. We don't need to exert. We need more to pull that in and receive nurture. Cancer is the sign of nurturing. There is no more nurturing sign than Cancer. It is number one. So it's a good time for nurturing. It's not to say that one cannot go out and get a job when sun is in Cancer. One can. But, you know, you have to look at your own personal astrology, your own personal chart to see what may work for you. But, you know, it's actually a good time. If you're going to have a holiday, an extended holiday, and this is an ideal time when the sun's in Cancer, because it's more of a nurturing time. If you think of having a holiday, you think of being nurtured and relaxing, being with your family, right? Kids are home from school. Spend more time with the family. It's an ideal time for that. And anything you want to do around the home. It's interesting how the way it plays out is, I mean, this is the way it is in the Western world, and it is in much of the Eastern world now, because the Eastern world follows the ways of the Western world nowadays, more than vice versa. And so, when the sun goes into Leo, from the middle of August till the middle of September, the Vedic sun signs always change mid-month. So you say, well, why would they change in the middle of the month? Well, the Western ones change on the 21st or the 22nd. And if you look at the Vedic months, the months begin at the middle of the Western month. That's when they begin. So they're not the middle of the month at all. They're exactly when the sun moves. That's when the month begins, naturally. Isn't that how we determine the year? By the movement of the sun? So why should not the month be determined in the same way? Well, it should be, but it isn't. Not in the Western world. Not in the Western world. And they, you know, why would you start, if the sun moves on the 21st of a month, then that should be the demarcation of the beginning of the month. Anyway, it's a separate argument. But so the sun moves in the middle of the month, in reality, into Leo for 1 month. Now this would be prime time. But those first 2 weeks or of sun and Leo, in other words, the last 2 weeks of August are traditionally the time, or I mean, month of August is traditionally the time when people do not work, try not to work, try to take time off. More people take time off in August, generally speaking, I think, than any other time, except maybe the week between Christmas and New Year's, perhaps. And this is the time, because sun is what? Profession, career, rulership, management, organization, executive decisions, government, governmental decisions, law, legal issues. And where do we find all these people?
On holiday.
On holiday. In arguably the best 2 weeks of the year to make these kinds of decisions. Welcome to Kali Yuga.
It doesn't happen every year.
Happens every year.
Does it?
Sun's in Leo.
Sun's in Leo in the middle of August.
Every year, yeah. Changes every year.
Really? You really got a problem.
Well, I mean, you could argue in favor and say, yeah, but the first 2 weeks of September, when people usually return to work, return to school. So there's your 2 weeks where it does coincide. I'm not sure about the attorneys. You know, there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast on my website from over in America and different countries. Here in Ireland and in England, the legal system shuts down for how long? 3 months or 2 months?
Two
months. Which are they?
No.
July and August, something like that. Which in America, you see, this would be a great source of entertainment for us. That you shut down the entire legal system for 2 months. I mean, what are you thinking?
There's more keys in America.
Yeah, okay, well, that may be true. What do you mean, per capita or what? Anyway, so... Sun in Leo. Leo is what element?
Fire.
So sun, fire planet in a fire sign. There's an even stronger position for the sun. When a planet is exalted, it is better, stronger than it would be in its own sign. And a planet can be exalted only one sign out of 12. Whereas it could be in its own sign, in two signs out of 12, except sun and moon. Sun and moon can be in its own sign in one sign out of 12, and can be exalted in one sign out of 12. So what is the sun's sign of exaltation when it becomes its most powerful? It's a fire sign. There's your hint.
Leo
is its own sign.
Okay. Aries.
Aries. That's when the sun is exalted.
On the Mars.
Yeah. And the moon is exalted?
Taurus.
Correct. The moon is exalted in Taurus. Which is what element?
Earth.
Correct. Earth and water? Earth and water are harmonious. Why? When you pour water on earth, things grow. Fire and air are harmonious. When you add air to fire, it grows. So it has to be reflected on the physical plane too. It has to work on all levels. Not arbitrarily. So, good. So I don't forget to do this. There is a doctor. Her name is Madhuri Sant. She is from Mumbai. And she is teaching courses in Ayurveda. And these are available. I spoke to her today for the first time. Very nice lady. She has a day workshop, Introduction to Ayurveda. She's running it on two different days, August 6th. That's 4 days from now. And also again on August 13th. From 11 to 4 p.m. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
She's in Bray.
What do you mean Indian time? She's not in Mumbai. She's here. So that is €75. And then you can read about this. This is, and then the second one, which I booked four people into today, Introduction to Ayurveda. I mean, I've been studying Ayurveda for a number of years myself, so I didn't want to do the introduction. This is the one I like here. Day Workshop Ayurveda Cooking for Health.
Wow.
That will be Saturday the 27th of August from 1 to 4 p.m.
Where?
3 hours. 50 euros.
Southern Cross
Road. 98 Swan Brook, Southern Cross Road, Bray. She's going to teach you about the Shadrasa, the six rasas in cooking. Sweet, sour, pungent, astringent,
bitter. So do you need to know your dosha type before you go?
Or? No, the dosha is still covered in the first one.
Can you just do the cooking one?
Well, I'm just doing the cooking one. We're just doing the cooking one. Yeah. You know your dosha. You know that.
Yeah.
But you don't need to do the introductory if you have some knowledge in that.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then you should go.
Yeah.
Plus, she's a doctor. No, I'm not. She's a medical doctor. I didn't ask her what her discipline was. Very nice lady. Doesn't matter. But she's going to teach you how to use spices and the medicinal aspects of spices. She can tell you what the spices do. Mark and Day, he knows all that anyway. And so does Nigel. These guys are walking encyclopedias of culinary and vitamin mineral knowledge. They're mixtures of potions. So that'll be interesting. And she's going to teach you about the energetics of food, eating with the seasons, food combining, and then simple healthy recipes for... She's not making near enough food here, Markandeya. Khichdi, ghee, and lassi. That's only getting started.
That's it.
That's it.
First course.
That's right. That's just that's the teaser.
That's it.
That's it.
Well, I'm sure she'll do more afterwards.
Oh yeah, we'll.
Recipes.
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I've got our Ayurvedic cookbooks if you're interested. You know, so here it is. And I booked in Kalindi myself, her mother, and we have a friend going to come visit us from Canada. And he is going to, his visit happens to coincide, an old friend of mine, with this. So he's booked in too, whether he likes it or not. I booked him in.
Yeah.
He's a chemistry teacher. It should be easy for him. So there you have it. So this sounds good, no?
Right.
And... Madhuri? No, her name's at the bottom. I wrote it at the bottom there. Madhuri Sant. Okay, and that'll be fun. We'll be there. You come too. We'll have a great time. We'll learn something. We've talked about this on occasion that... We are now living in the Iron Age, Kali Yuga, according to the Vedic epochs or eras that divide the universe into essentially four time frames or seasons or epochs. The Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, or Sattva, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali. Yuga. Yuga means age. And it is said that in the first 10,000 years of Kali Yuga, there is a minor Golden Age, especially in the last 500 years, when Chaitanya, who is an incarnation of Radha and Krishna combined, Krishna being male energy of the Godhead, and Radha being the energy female, and the perfect balance between the male and the female. Chaitanya came as a personification of both of those energies some 500 years ago. All avatars or incarnations of God that descend to earth are predicted in the Vedas. You will find them predicted before they arrive in various Puranas or histories in Sanskrit verses. And Chaitanya was predicted before he arrived. And he came about 500 years ago, and he more or less established the Dharma of the age. And because in the current age, people are becoming less conscious, less conscientious. We are caving in more frequently to the lower nature, the dictates of the senses, less interested in pursuing the higher nature. But from the time of Chaitanya, as he enunciated or established the Dharma of the age, the spiritual practice of the age, then people will begin to reawaken their spiritual nature, their higher nature, and begin to bring in different practices of spirituality. Well, have we seen that? Well, certainly we've seen that, you know, pretty much worldwide. How many people now practice yoga? You know, 25, maybe, I don't know how many years ago. Less than 50 years ago, people in the West never even knew what yoga was. And now yoga is part of the Western lexicon. And if you want to go to a yoga class, you could find one right nearby, wherever you live, pretty much. So it'll be in your neighborhood. So yoga, meditation, even chanting mantras, even people who don't chant mantras know about it. They at the very least they know about chanting Om. Everybody does. People are familiar with Ayurveda and supplements and vitamins and so many different things. Alternative healing is now more popular, arguably, than ever. You know, when alternative healing was not alternative healing, when it was mainstream healing before the allopathic guys took over. So there's many, many evidences of a rise in consciousness. That's the point. So this particular rise in consciousness is supposed to extend for 10,000 years. Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, lasts for a total of 432,000 years. That is a long time. And it's been in operation since Krishna was here and since Krishna left the planet, which is 5,000 years ago. And that was officially the demarcation point of the end of the Dwapara Yuga, the Bronze Age, and the beginning of the Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, they sometimes call it the era of quarrel and hypocrisy. Conflict and hypocrisy. Hypocrisy means many people are posing as something that they are not. They claim to be this, that, and the other, but they are not. They have no qualification, but they try to make you think that they do in order to gain money or status or whatever it is they're after. So this is rampant now in the world. There's many cheaters, imposters, and hypocritical types of people in this age. So over time, in the grand scheme of things, things will dwindle and diminish in this Iron Age. People will get shorter and smaller. The earth will yield less and less fruits, vegetables. Everything will get smaller in time. Less growth, more deserts. Less water, more droughts, famine. These are symptoms also of Kali Yuga. Increase in droughts and famine, pestilence, irregular weather patterns, storms, very destructive storms. Many of these things are current. We don't have to wait. They're here. Here in Ireland, it is August 2nd. We just went through July, the coldest July on record in 50 years. So people always ask me, are you having a lovely summer there? And I go, yeah, we're waiting for it. Any day now.
It was Tuesday this year.
It was Tuesday this year, exactly. That's about it.
I think it's been nice.
Yeah, but it hasn't been summer, quote unquote. Okay, so we are seeing a kind of a minor period of a golden age that's taking place now. And that's why there is a rise in consciousness. So what Chaitanya inaugurated when he came 500 years ago was the Yuga Dharma, or the religion or the practice for the age, which was simply chanting. Chanting the names of God and chanting mantras, using japa, mala, chanting beads, or you don't have to use beads, but chanting. Chanting you can do anywhere, even driving down the street, walking down the street. It's not difficult. Like meditation, you have to sit, you have to be able to sit quietly for a while. You need a quiet place. You need not to be disturbed. It's chanting you can kind of do. It's easy. So Chaitanya's followers wrote volumes and volumes of books, many of which are available. But Chaitanya himself only wrote six stanzas.
How long is
a
stanza?
Eight stanzas. Eight verses. That's all he wrote. So I thought I might share that with you. And everything that his followers wrote is really based upon this as its essence. They've used Bhagavad Gita and everything else, so that's there. But Puranas and Mahabharata and all those traditional Vedic books, Ramayana, that's all included. But so he says in the first verse, "Glory to the congregational chanting." Sankirtan. Kirtan means chanting or singing. Sankirtan means together with others. So congregational chanting. Glory to congregational chanting, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This congregational chanting is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge, it increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. And it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious.
Is that one stanza?
That's one. So, in the material world, we have become conditioned by many, many lifetimes of being in material bodies. We've become conditioned and we've become habituated and we've become contaminated, in other words, covered over by Maya, by material energy. And we lose touch with our true, original, eternal, spiritual identity as a soul. Kalindi, what is that there? There's a fox right there. All right, to the left now, to the left. He's the one from the other day. Well, we actually put food out the back a lot in one spot. He's coming to have us some dinner. The peacocks are a little too smart for that. And what they do at night is they roost on the roof. Yeah, he wouldn't have much of a chance of getting them unless he could go up to the roof. And they roost at the top of the chimney. So they're pretty clever when it comes to that. And the one thing about peacocks, they're not like chickens. They are not chicken. They will come after you. You know, they're pretty bold, pretty brave. So I don't know if they'll go after a fox, but they certainly go after the dogs and the cat. They go after them. And they peck or they, what the heck, the claw. So anyway, there's Mr. Fox visiting us. So as I was saying, we become conditioned by so many lifetimes in the material world. And the mind is sometimes, Chaitanya compared the mind to a mirror. And the mirror will reflect light perfectly or reflect any image. So when we aim the mind, I'm sort of giving you a crude example, above, up, then we will reflect the light of spirit. But when we turn our attention down here to matter, to the material world, then it'll reflect matter. And essentially, it becomes covered in dust. So how many lifetimes we are habituating the mind or covering it with dust of material activities, material identification, material experiences, material negative behaviors, whatever it might be. So there's the dust covering the mirror of the mind. So by chanting names of God, it cleanses the dust from the mind. And then over time, it begins to increase the ocean of transcendental bliss and finally gives us the taste of the nectar for which we are always anxious. What is the nectar? It's the joy. It's the bliss. None of us want to feel down. We don't want any down days. Who wants down days? Put your hand up. Nobody. Yet, we have this. Up days, down days, sideways. Nobody wants that. So that was his first. The second verse he says, "Oh my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings, and thus you have hundreds and millions of names." Well, he's defining God. Who has hundreds of millions of names? Only God. Like Krishna, Govinda, Allah, Yahweh, Jehovah.
Vaheguru.
By who?
Vaheguru.
In these transcendental names, you have invested all of your transcendental energies. Well, this is an interesting point. You can't... Some people say, well, if there is a God, why don't I see him? Why does he just show himself to me? Because if you're going to go visit an important person, say the king or the queen or a prime minister or, I don't know, some important person, and you have an audience, what will you do before you go there?
Shower.
You're going to have a shower. You'll have a shower or a bath. You'll scrub up nicely. You'll put on your best clothing, or you'll go buy something to wear, and you will come in absolutely your best, won't you? Does somebody have to tell you to do that? Well, hopefully they don't. You'll figure that out yourself. You'll just do that, won't you? You'll be clean and presentable. Right? That's what you would do to go see an important person. But you clean the outside. With God, you can't just clean the outside. You must also clean the inside to be qualified to see God. And having a bath ain't gonna do it. But we do know that cleanliness is next to godliness. That is a fact. So we must clean ourselves, but people think that just means keeping the house clean and keeping yourself clean. Yes, these are good things. That's not enough. You must cleanse the heart and cleanse the mind. And that's what it's about. You cannot see God until you've qualified yourself by clearing the heart of these negative attachments, behaviors, thoughts. You know, sometimes we'll go into a group of people or a party or I don't know, where there's a lot of people, and in our minds we'll be fault finding like crazy. Oh, look at that person. What do they think they are? Why are they doing this? Or why are they saying that? Or why are they dressed like that? Right? Why do we do that? Because we can. And no one knows. We could be smiling. But our mind could be in the depths of criticism. But nobody knows that. Because they can't read our minds. Can you imagine you're standing in front of God and you're fault-finding everybody else that's in the room? God's going to go... Gee, hang on now. What are you doing here? Right? So, because we can't see God, we have not yet purified ourselves sufficiently, then he invests all of his transcendental potency in his names. So the names you can take. Here, you can have the names. You can say Krishna. You can say Govinda. You can say Vishnu. Anybody can. You can take it in vain too, if you want to. But here you have immediate access. You say, well, it doesn't seem like anything special to me. Because you haven't cleansed the mirror of the mind enough yet to realize the transcendental potency of the name, of the names. So that's what's required. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names, O my Lord. Out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy names. But I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them, Chaitanya says. because he's telling you exactly what the situation most of us are in. You know, it sounds good, but, you know, I would rather watch Big Brother on TV or the Kardashians or something or other, you know, than chant the names. I'd rather do anything but that. So, because I have no attraction, because my mind is still in a material, mundane, illusory, or contaminated state. In the next verse, he says, once you chant the holy name of the Lord, this is my actually favorite verse of these. Once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, one should be more tolerant than a tree and devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. Which others? All others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So how would you be able to chant the holy name of the Lord constantly? You'd have to be in this state of mind. And some people might argue, well, wait a second now, I don't know that I want to make myself as low as the straw in the street. I don't think I like that. It's really just a metaphor for the degree of humility that one must have or try to achieve. As soon as we have any degree of self-importance, immediately we are caught up in ego. And when we're caught up in ego, it means we're caught up in duality. Well, I'm better than him. Or I have a nicer car than he does. Or I make more money than he does. Or whatever it might be. So then we're caught up in duality. And we immediately fall victim to ego and ego identification. So, that's why humility is important. More tolerant than a tree. Well, I don't know how you could be more tolerant than a tree. Because a tree will tolerate anything from anybody, including all weather and all seasons and getting crapped on by the birds. And the tree won't say anything. Never, never utter one word of protest. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire to enjoy beautiful women. Well, for women, beautiful men. Nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So I want to serve God. I want to be connected to God and not serve the mind, not serve the senses, not serve the ego. If you can serve the mind, the senses, and the ego, then you will get another birth because you will have generated karma. And so when you generate karma, then you must come back to suffer the karma or enjoy the karma. Depending. Then he says, O son of Maharaj Nanda, so he's speaking about Krishna specifically, I am your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. It's hard to get out. It's a good metaphor. If you're in the middle of the ocean, how will you get out? You can't get out of the middle of the ocean. I don't care what kind of swimmer you are. You can't, unless somebody rescues you. You know, you could swim for a while, and then what? 20-foot wave comes along. Good luck with that one. So please, he says, pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So this the whole concept of lotus feet is very common in the Vedic tradition. The feet are the lowest part of the body. So you're not placing yourself in any high position. You're placing yourself very humbly at the lowest place in relation to God, at the feet, ready to serve. Oh my Lord, when will my eyes be decorated with tears of love, flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up, and when will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? So now he's telling you what the goal is. How would you get to this point when you're just simply chanting and you're exhibiting these symptoms? Voice choking up, hair standing on end, goosebumps, and decorated with tears of love flowing constantly. Because you're now experiencing a state of love. When the heart has been purified enough, when the mind has been cleansed or dusted enough, where you begin to reflect the pure light of spirit, and at that time, the names reveal what they actually are. They're not just words. They're non-different. Here, for us as humans, your name and your possessions, your body, these are all different things. But for God, everything connected to God is on an absolute level. So the name, quality, pastimes, anything connected to God is on the same absolute transcendental level. It's non-different. So by chanting the names, you can directly associate with God. If you have cleansed yourself enough internally. So when will all these things happen to me at the recitation of your name? O Govinda, feeling your separation, I am considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. How do you feel? Give me an example in life where you consider a moment to be like 12 years or more. In what situation, what circumstance does that happen? In anticipation of something that you cannot wait to have happen, like lovers waiting to meet. That would be the positive side of that. I know people with addictions also anticipate, you know, having their next experience, and it seems like it's a long time. So anything where you can't wait to have it, and in this case, you can't wait to see God and be with God, you need this kind of intense desire. This is what qualifies you. And when God, this is what, you see, you don't, it's not a question of trying to see God. It's more, it works more effectively the other way around, by making God want to see you, by being in such a state of mind that God notices you. He says, who is that person down there who has such a desire to see me that they, you know, they can't wait, and their body is they're in tears and they're trembling and their voice is choking up. So this is the symptoms. So he says, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. And I am feeling all vacant in the world in your absence. So one feels empty because one is not with one's lover, with one's love. So it's the same idea. Only it's not mundane love. It's transcendental love. I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. Because I love him so much, but he won't appear to me. He's breaking my heart. Why is he being like that? I'm still going to love him, no matter. So this is what kind of love? Here he's showing you unconditional love. Love without condition. Which is not, I mean, we do see some cases of that here in the material world. We see the parents' love for the child. Early on in the child's life, the parents' love is very unconditional until the child develops a ego. Then things change. As any of you who are parents will attest. So, this is unconditional love, no matter. And Chaitanya concludes by saying, he is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So that was it. That's what he wrote. That was the whole thing. Nothing more. But it says it all. That's what it comes down to. So, what? Go ahead. Yep.
Describe God. It's almost as if he's something separate, or he's looking down, and that reminds me of more conventional concepts of God.
Yeah. Vadanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So the Vedas explain that there are three levels at which one realizes God. But what you're familiar with and what most of us are familiar with when we think about going over to India and doing meditation, etc., and where what typically is presented is only the first level of God realization, which is Brahman, which is spirit. Spirit, or Brahman, is all-pervasive. It's everywhere. This material creation could not exist unless it was hung on spiritual energy. Unless it, essentially it's like it pearls on a thread. You can't have a necklace unless it's strung on something. And that string is spirit. It holds it all together. So spirit pervades everything. We know this. We accept this fact. So that is the energy of God. And that's the first level of God realization. Energy, diversity, personality. Diversity means we realize God within the heart. God is within the heart of every creature in creation as the Paramatma. Within every creature there is an Atma, a soul, including the animals. We know that. But also within every creature is a Parama Atma. a supreme soul or super soul, God. So there's the Atma and the Paramatma. So we know that we're here. You may not see your soul, but you know by the symptom of the soul, which is consciousness. So by consciousness, we know we're here. And we know we're gone sometimes at night or when we sleep. If we see somebody lying sleeping, we all know that that person right now is gone. You know, and if you want to talk to them, and their body's there, you see him breathing, you're going to have to first do what? Wake them up. Bring them back to consciousness. Right?
Where is their consciousness gone?
They're just floating off someplace. They've left the body for a time. Floating out on the silver cord. Dream state. Or maybe deep sleep. But Paramatma...
Consciousness
is a symptom of spirit.
Yeah, so the consciousness is gone
with the spirit. Wherever the spirit is gone, that's where the consciousness is gone. Correct. Just like your dream.
Yeah.
You know. Now we wake them up, the consciousness does? Returns. They return, they go. What? That's them coming back. Right? So, when you realize that God is in everything, as the yogis do when they meditate on God in the heart, that is called diversity. That is called Brahmati Paramatma, Paramatmeti in the verse. That's God in diversity. First, energy, then diversity, pervading everything. And the third level is personality. So God the person, you can go into relationship with God as a person. And your individuality remains. You don't lose your individuality. You lose your ego, your false identity or false individuality reflecting matter. That gets dissolved. But there is an eternal individuality. And that remains. Now, if you don't want personality or diversity, well, then you can have the lower level of God realization. It's fine. The Buddhists don't believe there's any God. There is no God. There's only nirvana, which is the cessation of material existence.
And the Buddha believed in anatma, which means there was no soul. There's nothing that...
Right. But see, my argument to that is, that's why when they die, these big lamas and rinpoches, that they always want to come back because there ain't nothing going on out there for them on the other side. There's just not much happening. Well, if they believe in anatma, how is it that they still come back? The atma, there's still an identity. Okay, well then, that's what they do. That's what they do. They just keep coming back. And then they try to figure out which body this... You know, when they hear about a great little soul who's taken birth, they go put him to all the tests and they try to determine which one of their old buddies he is. Do we know this lama from before?
You know?
So this is... that's a little different, but that's how it's explained. On the three levels of God realization. This is, where do you think they get in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost from? That's where they get it from. The Father is God the Father, personality. The Son, where they go wrong is the Son of God is the diversity. But it's not just the Son of God, it's all the sons and daughters and all the animals. That's the Son. It's all the children of God. And the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, the all-pervasive Spirit. So that's where it comes from.
That's I want to put this master. Most of the mantras actually start with Om. That Om Namo Padme Hum.
Yes.
Om is the sound vibration, Bija mantra for Lord Shiva.
Well, yeah, there's a lot that comes from.
Well, it all ultimately comes from the Vedas, but Buddha denounced the Vedas because his dharma or his mission was to promote ahimsa,
yeah,
nonviolence, because the people who were conducting Vedic yajnas or sacrifices were getting carried away with animal slaughter, because it makes provisions for killing a goat or whatever.
Yeah, and also the caste system.
Yeah. Well, caste system when it's corrupted, but
it wasn't in the Vedas anyway. Then it's like a caste system. Vedism is a Muslim, actually, it's a new religion compared to the Hinduism. And they have Wahhabi. If you go to Saudi Arabia, they have Wahhabi, they have a Shia, they have a Sunni, then they have different tribes, and they have a Kardiani, they have Ambiya as well. Even Sikhism, they have a different kind of casteism as well. And even if you go to Northern Ireland, you can see the casteism and Christianity as well. Mm-hmm. Like a Catholic, Protestant, and Methodist, and Presbyterian, the other. As the religion, like, it's getting older, and then there's so many. But even when this, even like a low, in Hinduism, like Rama and Krishna, they never actually, they didn't born in actually as a Brahman. They Krishna born as a
Kshatriya.
Like
no, he's born as a Kshatriya, but he acted, his foster parents was Vaishya. But you see, the caste system, the natural caste system, which is not the caste system, the natural divisions of society are in the Bhagavad Gita. And it isn't this corruption that they now have. It's corrupted because it's Kali Yuga. One's natural inclination to work, what they do in the world, is based on guna and karma. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Guna means your natural talents and abilities, your qualities and traits. Karma means the kind of work that you have an inclination to do, to perform. So that is your guna and your karma, your nature and your type of work. This is not, yet you can say that, for example, a doctor or a lawyer would be a Brahmin, according to those divisions.
You know,
yeah, an intellectual, an educated person. Okay? So, it is likely that the children of a doctor or lawyer would also be Brahmin children, but it's not assured. Some of them may be, some of them may not be. So, it becomes corrupted when you just take them all of the children to be Brahmins, even when they have their guna and their karma, their qualities and their work, do not reflect that of the Brahmin. Then it becomes corrupt. You see? So, whatever your, you know, like you, as a writer, you're a Brahmin. Nigel's a Brahmin. You're both intelligent, educated people. He makes his living by virtue of his knowledge. He's a Brahmin. Well, he's born a Brahmin. But still, his work is also Brahmin work. That's what he's been studying. But he was, for a while, he was a merchant. So he stepped down from his actual nature to earn a living as a merchant, a Vaishya. Okay? My nature, I came from a blue-collar family. My adoptive family, but my nature is that of a Brahmin. I'm a, you know, that's always been my nature. So it's not about, you know, if I was consigned to do what my father did, then I would be a worker. You know, I'd be a Shudra. And I wouldn't have any chance. I'd be like, you know, building houses for the hammer and nails. Something like that, you know. Wouldn't be the best thing for me. So that's how it actually works. What's that?
You could still
chat in the car. Yeah.
There was another drawback with some people that took the advantage of they would misinterpret the Dharma. And but even like, you know, a lot of when you know, remember that India was ruled under Muslims for I think 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And also, and then 200 years under the British, and what they do. If you love something, what you gonna do? Like, if I try to snatch something, you love this paper, like, you know, if I go away, you gonna read again. Then what I do this time? I just what you keen into that. Like, it's a piece of spirituality for you. When I put all the rubbish into that, like, you know, I mix with some interesting things, then obviously, oh, that's not what I'm looking for, that, then you're gonna, you know, throw that away. And if you see most of the, when the Muslims had India, they actually formed the University of Nalanda, one of the first universities of the whole world, and it took them more than 3 months.
Nalanda
Vishwavidyalaya.
Yeah, both the Christians and the Muslims, in their zeal to spread their faith, destroyed all knowledge extant on the planet, be it scientific, intellectual, spiritual, philosophical discoveries. They destroyed it all. So there would be nothing superior to their low consciousness religions. That's what they did. These are the only two religions in our relatively recent history where they've destroyed everything. Only the Christians and the Muslims. Nobody else. The Jews did not do this. The Buddhists did not do this. The Hindus did not do this. Just Christians and Muslims.
What?
They deserve each other.
Control.
But then again, like, you know, there was an article that as well, a French guy, and he used to be Buddhist, and he done a study all the way. And he said that Buddhism is the main reason of Indians, ancient Indians, downfall, because in ancient, like in Bhagavad Gita, they say that, like, okay, if you have to fight, you have to fight to protect yourself. A Buddhism or ahimsa, nothing you do at all. But they say, no, but for protection, for dharma, you need to actually fight, right? And they couldn't fight, and then the Muslim attacked, and they said, okay, come on.
Maybe it's the reason for the downfall of Tibet, too.
Yeah. They couldn't protect themselves.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, in the Vedic tradition, you have the Kshatriyas, which are warriors, and if you need a kick butt, you do. I mean, it's just like, you know, I can tell you that I'm a pacifist generally, but if you come to my house and try to rob or steal from me, believe me, my pacifism is over, and I'm now a warrior.
Even the Native American Indian.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know. So, I mean, this is practical. Okay, so let's do a little bit of meditation. And then okay, close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax breathe and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant pearl-white light comes down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet and into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. All right. Let's choose a name of God, Krishna or Govinda or Vishnu, or if you like to choose a name from a different tradition, that's fine. Whatever you like. And let's meditate on that name and repeating it slowly and focusing on the sound of it in your mind, in your heart. Slowly returning to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. All right. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. Now our next meeting will be September 6th. That's the first Tuesday in September. So you're welcome for some tea if you like.